I think we got an interesting show for you today. We're going to talk college tennis, in particular this Razorback tennis shutdown that was announced last Friday. The Razorbacks getting rid of their men's and women's tennis programs. They're going to go down to only sponsoring 17 sports. Patrick McEnroe from SiriusXM will join us to talk about it, as well as college tennis in general and some of the changes that are happening in that sport. Also, Matt Brown from the Extra Points newsletter will join us to talk about the business side of this and kind of some of the numbers that go into informing this type of decision that the Razorbacks made. I want to tell you, when it comes to your game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eggland's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need with 6 times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eggland's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for more information. We're also brought to you by Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Wherever you're joining us, we appreciate you being here. Maybe you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify listening to our podcast. We've got a video version on YouTube. We also put the video on our social media channels at Facebook and Twitter. Just search Whole Hog Sports at any of those platforms, and you'll find not only this podcast, but all of our podcasts. Hope that you'll subscribe and help us out that way. Hey, we're joined now by Patrick McEnroe. He's a former professional tennis player. He hosts Holding Court with Patrick McEnroe Saturdays on Mad Dog Sports Radio. That's on SiriusXM. And last week, I really enjoyed listening to your show, Patrick, about the Arkansas tennis situation and college tennis at large. I wonder, when you heard that Arkansas was cutting its tennis program, what were your initial reactions?
Pretty bummed, because, you know, I had planned on my show to go all in on this story before that announcement was made. Okay. And I've been working on, an op-ed, for a pretty major, newspaper that I believe is going to come out in the next day or two. I haven't gotten the official, but they said they're going to run it, but it's really, obviously the when the Arkansas news broke on Friday afternoon, that's when they like to bury the big story, right? Mm-hmm. They do announcement on Friday, which is what your AD did. Didn't even have a press conference, is my understanding. Just put out an announcement.
That's right.
Blindsided the entire community there that supports Arkansas tennis. I got texts immediately from a couple of guys that used to play on the team, you know, way back in my era. So I was shocked. You know, we in the tennis world have sort of been battling this at the lower levels of college tennis, you know, not in the big bad SEC, you know, the D2 schools and some smaller D1 programs over the years, always sort of on the lookout in the tennis community to, you know, continue to fight to protect as many programs as possible. But this definitely caught certainly us in the tennis community was a big shock, and it sounds like it did to you as well there in Fayetteville. So, you know, that's a team that's darn good team, great history. I actually was at our tennis academy here yesterday. We have, by the way, about 60-some coaches on our staff at the John McEnroe Tennis Academy, which I oversee here in New York City, many of whom played college tennis at every level of college tennis, and many of whom are international players. Okay, so I'm all for international players in all sports, but I think, to be honest with you, to me, it's gone too far. You know, the numbers in tennis are exponential. It's well over 60%, and I believe that's going to go even higher if something doesn't change at D1 level. And it's also happening at lower level D1 schools, meaning that aren't tennis powerhouses, you know, like that are in the SEC. And I played at Stanford for 4 years. And I mean, some of my best memories as a player, I was lucky enough to play on the tour for many years, are playing college tennis. So I want to try to keep that for as many juniors as possible in this country. I hear from parents all the time at our academy about their kids that this is their goal, is to try to play college tennis. And the reality of the situation is, because of the influx of international players, and many of them are starting college at a much older age, which is, to me, hugely problematic. Mm-hmm. I mean, that you've got guys in the mid-20s still playing any college sport. You know, Carson Beck in football. I mean, to me, that was a joke also, that he's playing, you know, quarterback at 26 years old. And that's how, and the number one player for Wake Forest, one of the top teams in the country, you know, likely a team that could win the national title again. I think their number one player is 26 years old. That makes absolutely no sense to me. So this Arkansas decision, you know, brought this to another level. But to me, this is a huge problem above and beyond what's happening down at the University of Arkansas.
The number of international players, and I know that's something that you talked about a lot last weekend, and I'm using the numbers that you referenced on your show. I think you said that around, or 20 years ago, it was around 40% of the incoming players in men's college tennis were international players. Now it's closer to 70%.
Right.
Do you think that makes it easier for these colleges to cut tennis programs when it's not affecting American kids as much?
100%. I think it does. I think if you're the AD at Arkansas, and, you know, a lot of the what we call the Olympic sports, right, swimming, track and field, tennis, wrestling, you know, most of these sports are costs the universities money. That's the way it's always been. Football is one that makes the most money. Basketball, you know, a close second. Men's basketball, that is. Women's basketball in some places does well too. But for the most part, it's those two sports that generate the revenue. So in a sport like tennis, where the numbers continue to go up exponentially of international players, it checks another box for the athletic department and for the pressure they're feeling in athletic departments to pay NIL money to, you know, make sure that they can compete in the SEC in football and basketball, because it is about the money. And, you know, paying players, look, I was all for some of these players getting paid, you know, based on all the money that the universities make. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there's been no guardrails put in place by the NCAA and by the conferences in the last few years, this is why this is getting out of control. And this is why I think it potentially could spread like wildfire for the Olympic sports, unless something is done pretty quickly.
Tennis, I don't know. I mean, I guess it kind of gets lumped into Olympic sports. Obviously, it's got a greater international appeal beyond the Olympics. I thought it was interesting. You said your brother, John McEnroe, was the last U.S. college tennis player to win a men's Grand Slam in 1984. He won Wimbledon and the U.S. Open, played at Stanford. What do you think that, like maybe the fact that there's not a whole lot of college players who are going out and winning at the highest level on the professional circuit, maybe the same way as the lack of opportunities for American players, do you think that has an impact here, where there's not maybe that same pressure from the professional side to keep some of these tennis programs intact on the college level?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because in a way, it's sort of a dichotomy what's happening now, because for the elite players in college, okay, and generally speaking, the level in college tennis has gone up exponentially, particularly in the last about 10 years. And part of that is the influx of the international player, right? Mm-hmm. So that's taking spots away from Americans, okay? Now, some will argue, well, so what? You know, they're just the best players. You know, the University of Illinois had four players from Serbia on their Final Four team in basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't think the Illinois fans were complaining about that, right? They want to get to the Final Four. Now, tennis is different because it's not as much of a team game. But, you know, for you look at some American players out of college recently. Ben Shelton played at the University of Florida for 2 years. He's top 10 in the world. He's a legit contender, potentially to become the next American, maybe to win a major. Emma Navarro is a woman who made it into the top 10. Peyton Stern, she played at University of Texas. There's a bunch of international players that are also now top 50 players in the tour. Not to mention Ethan Quinn, who played at the University of Georgia. Bassavaretti played at Stanford. So there's a bunch of guys and girls and women that are playing at a high level in the pros. Mm-hmm. The problem is they're the elite. They're the 1% of players that are looking to play college tennis that have a chance to actually go to the pros, right? So that's maybe less than 1% of all the people playing D1 tennis. So the problem to me is not so much at the elite level. The problem more is for the pipeline. of tennis being a sport that kids want to take up. We've mm-hmm. always been challenged by that anyway, because of the cost, because of the opportunities. You know, you got to play with other kids. You know, it's much more difficult to become really good at tennis if you don't have the other players around you, if you're not in an area where there's other good players. So in a way, it's more about fighting for the player who wants to be like just the average D1 player. You know, and use education and use tennis as something that can help them get educated and help them participate in college tennis. That's how me and my brother got into tennis. Our parents were all about education. They put us, even before they could afford it, by the way, they put us in the best, you know, private school that they could, where we grew up in the New York City area. And we happened just to get really good at tennis, you know, completely by luck, just by chance that we happened to be good at it. We played all the sports. We played soccer. We played basketball. We played baseball. We loved them all. We happened to be a lot better at tennis, especially my brother, you know, got to number one in the world. Mm-hmm. But I was really proud of the fact that I got a college education. I got a scholarship at Stanford. I played on the team there. I had a great experience. And I want as many kids as possible that are playing junior tennis and that their parents are supporting them think that they still have that opportunity. That's slipping away now for young kids in tennis.
Do you think college athletic leaders have lost their way in some regards when all of the focus is on revenue, or 100%. It seems like all of the focus is on revenue and not so much these educational opportunities through sports?
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Now, part of it is, again, I don't want to blame like the individuals. You know, I've been in touch with a lot of college coaches since this sort of broke over a week ago. And I say to all of them, I don't blame you. I don't blame the coaches. They're trying to win. They're trying to field the best team to win, because even though it's tennis, it's not high profile like the football team, you still have to win. If you don't win over in a certain number of years, if you're competing at the highest level, you're going to get fired. So I get that. But I do think that it's because the NCAA has not come up with, I guess they're always, I always hear this from people, they're afraid of getting sued. Mm-hmm. You know, this is why they don't make rules and they're afraid of getting sued. You know, at the end of the day, the rails are off on this whole college sports thing. And so there's got to be a way now to figure out, okay, how can we pay play? I mean, look, I can't stand it in basketball when the guy plays 1 year at Michigan and then the next year he's at Connecticut and then the next year he's at Arizona. Mm-hmm. I mean, put some rules in place. You know, maybe you could transfer once. I'm all for these players making some money. Do I think there should be a cap on what they should make? Absolutely. Because still, college sports is still about, should be about education. Okay, I'm not saying, you know, they just announced they're going to add more teams to the basketball tournament. Okay, we all get it. You know, the money's huge. It's entertaining. People, I love to watch the Final Four. I watch the football. I'm into it. I'm a fan. But at the same time, there's got to be some way that the economics that's going on can still not entirely forget about the academics.
Let's get you out of here on this. I want to drill down on something you said a second ago about the popularity of the sport among younger kids. What do you think? Because Arkansas is not the only tennis program that's getting cut. I mean, I know of at least one other at St. Louis that's been announced since then, and it seems like there's a lot that this is happening at. What do you think this does to the popularity of the sport and the number of kids that are playing it when there are not going to be as many opportunities to go to college and get an education through it?
You know, we're very lucky at our academy here in New York City that we have tons of kids, but I hear this from all over the country that this is a major problem, that this is, you know, when kids are assessing, even a mom, you know, I have a mom who lives in my town, her son just got a scholarship to play in college. But she says to me, because she's very involved, she's got, you know, a lot of kids, one plays baseball, you know, this one plays tennis. And she always says to me, you know, if the kids like this, and none of these kids are thinking about being professionals, but they're good. They dedicated their entire junior years to becoming good at tennis, right? And she said to me, she said, they talk all the time amongst themselves, the kids, the teenagers. They say, if that carrot wasn't there, that they could play college tennis, not just for the education and the scholarship, but for the camaraderie, right? That's what's great about college tennis, especially because it's such an individual sport, to be able to enjoy it a bit more, to be part of a team. She said, if they didn't have that carrot, many of these players would have quit because of the dedication, the time, the effort it takes, never mind the financial commitment that the families have to make. You know, we're lucky at our academy. We raise money. We have a scholarship fund to help certain kids that couldn't afford it. Okay, but, you know, not everybody's lucky enough to do that, and not everybody's lucky enough to afford, you know, playing tennis, taking lessons, doing online school, which what many of these kids do now in all sports, but particularly in tennis. So to answer your question, I absolutely am very worried that that's the biggest fallout from this. I'm not as worried about the elite level of professional tennis players. I think we're still going to be able to have, you know, people want to know, when's the next American going to win a major? I hope it's soon. But, you know, we are competing with some of the greatest athletes on the planet playing tennis. But that is my biggest concern, the overall numbers and the tennis pipeline of kids and their parents and families wanting to stick with tennis.
Holding Court with Patrick McEnroe. You can hear him Saturdays on Mad Dog Sports Radio on Sirius XM. It's a great show, by the way. It talks more than just tennis. Patrick, I listen, and I look forward to listening to you again soon.
I appreciate you getting up early on a Saturday morning, even an hour earlier there. So yeah. Go Hogs, and keep this on the forefront, because this is an issue that's not going away.
Thank you, Patrick. We're joined now by Matt Brown from the Extra Points newsletter. He's been on our show multiple times before. Matt, it's always great to have you here. You know, the this Arkansas tennis story, it became a big one nationally. I was actually sitting at this desk last Friday, and I got a text at 12:27 from somebody I know who's usually pretty plugged in. He said, "Hey, I'm hearing the tennis programs may get cut at Arkansas," but it didn't make it sound like it was anything imminent. I had an interview at 12:30. I do the interview. I'm finishing up, wrapping up with that, and I look at my email, and the message comes across the inbox: Arkansas tennis is cut. I just put out a tweet. You know, it just says news. Arkansas tennis has been cut. I don't think I've ever had a social media post that's been interacted with like that was. This story took off like wildfire on Friday afternoon, and I wonder from your perspective, why do you think Arkansas tennis getting cut became such a big national story?
Yeah, I've seen the same thing, honestly, on my end. And I'm not somebody that typically writes about tennis all that often. I think part of the reason this has blown up nationally is that there is a concern among many college sports administrators and fans and people in this ecosystem that as expenses are increasing for player compensation in a couple of sports, and as operational expenses are increasing in a couple of other areas, that schools will begin to make cuts or make changes away from a more broad-based athletic offering. Mm-hmm. And some of those trends have been happening pre-transfer portal, pre-house settlement. We've had some of these conversations post-COVID, which was a financial shock to the system for many schools, and enrollment is changing. But if you were somebody that was inclined to sound alarm bells about the financial status quo of this industry, you could point to, oh my gosh, here's a wealthy SEC program cutting a sport. That resonates, I think, differently to casuals than, say, something that Illinois State or St. Louis or Indiana Purdue Fort Wayne might be doing with one of their sports.
It's an SEC team. And like you said, you know, it's a big-time program. Can you think of another SEC program that has been cut in this era? Because I could not come up with one.
There probably is one. The closest thing I could think of was, like, after COVID, Clemson tried to cut track. Now, that's obviously the ACC, but spiritually, you know, I think Clemson is more in common with most of these schools. And then they ended up losing a lawsuit and added sports rather than cutting them. I know, this is the last sport that's been cut, first sport that's been cut at Arkansas since, I think, before I was born.
93 right? was the last time.
After I was born, but when I was too young to remember.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen very often, and that's because the financial cost consideration, typically at a school that's bringing in 185 plus million in revenue, is different than perhaps Central Arkansas, or one of the HBCUs in the state.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm using rough numbers here, but it was somewhere around $2.6 million that Arkansas had in operating expenses between the two programs combined. Revenues. There's a couple of different numbers that are out there. I think maybe one was reported as part of the membership financial report with the NCAA. Maybe there was a slightly different number that was reported as another mandatory report every year. But it's somewhere in the $3,000 to $10,000 range in revenue that Arkansas tennis had between these two sports or these two programs last year. That's an awfully small number. And I can even remember whenever that MFRS report came out, there was, I think it was the women's program had $82 in reported revenue for the year. And just, you know, you're almost looking at that like, hey, is that a typo? Did they miss input a number? But it wasn't. It was $82 in revenue. when you look at that, because I know you have looked at that in relation to what other tennis programs are spending and bringing in, it's an awfully low number, right?
Unquestionably. Like I have open on my other monitor here, we collect those membership financial reports for every single Division I and Division II institution we possibly can. Mm-hmm. Arkansas's reported revenue from 25, overwhelmingly one of the smallest in the entire country. There's two programs that reported less, you know, Fullerton and Kennesaw State. Kennesaw reported $145. Mm. And then you had two programs that have tennis programs that reported zero. Now, I'll mention that with the caveat that schools report revenues differently, and there are many institutions that report their student fee money, for example, that mm-hmm. went to support tennis as revenue. And you and I probably wouldn't consider that revenue in the same way that a sports camp would be, or a corporation sponsoring tennis rackets or something. Mm-hmm. What I would say, though, is that based on the data that's available to me from the last several years, Arkansas is unusual compared to some of their SEC peers or similar finance Division I institutions, in that there's not really money coming in from donations specifically earmarked for tennis. There's not really money coming in for camps, which can be a five-figure revenue stream for a lot of other programs. And mm-hmm. it would look to me that trying to offset their burden with earned revenue has not been a priority, either among fans, donors, or the school. Now, with that caveat, do I think that Arkansas could have raised $2 million from renting out the courts or doing camps? No, nobody's doing that. Do I think it could have potentially defrayed the cost a little bit? Yeah, and that doesn't seem to be happening right now.
You talked about tuition in your newsletter Monday and how that is a lost, or maybe not lost is the right word, but how that can be an overlooked revenue stream that doesn't get talked about a whole lot with some of these sport cuts. Explain that.
Unquestionably. And this is a big reason why not just tennis, but many Olympic sports are sponsored for medium and small universities throughout Division I. The dirty little secret about tennis specifically is that, one, you don't have a lot of kids who are Pell Grant kids who are competing at the Division I level. We call it a country club sport because it's usually played in country clubs, mm-hmm. and many of the best athletes come from more affluent backgrounds. The other thing that's unique about tennis compared to many, many other sports in college athletics is that the player pool tends to be overwhelmingly international. And international students, when they come to the United States, they can't file a FAFSA. They don't get access to the same financial aid packages. And so if they're not on a complete full ride athletic scholarship, they are way more likely to be paying full freight, the full sticker price for tuition, and if they're living on campus, for board. At a place like Arkansas, which I think is still a pretty affordable land-grant university, the sticker price for everything is over $50,000. And if you have a kid who is not on a full scholarship, who's coming here from Australia or Croatia or Argentina or Italy, they're paying the full sticker price. And most students at a place like Arkansas, students aren't, unless they're very, very wealthy. So a common thing, and I don't think this is as much an issue specifically here because Arkansas has got 30,000 students and isn't hurting for enrollment the same way other places are. But if you have 20 kids on your combined tennis roster and you have 8 full ride scholarships and you have other people that are just playing and they're paying 50 grand, it won't show up anywhere on the athletic department ledger, but the university is now recruiting, 10, 12, 8 really rich people that are paying full freight. And that's real tuition. Knowing that anybody that they recruit outside of Little Rock or outside of Fayetteville or in the northwest part of the state might only be paying $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, $21,000. Mm. That's real money. Enough to potentially offset the $2.5 million, maybe not, but that's very much part of the financial calculus for so many other Olympic sports throughout Division I.
Why do you think tennis is the program that or the sport that's getting targeted a lot? Because I've noticed here, just since Arkansas made the announcement, I noticed earlier this week St. Louis University announced that it's going to get rid of its tennis program. Anthony Christensen, who's been covering tennis for us, wrote the other day when the Arkansas men made the NCAA tournament, he said Arkansas is one of two programs in the NCAA tournament this year on the men's side that is cutting the program at the end of the season. Gardner Webb is going to do this as well. And I've read many other programs, tennis programs that have been shut down here recently, maybe not this year, but in past years. Why do you think tennis is a sport that continues to get targeted?
think I would agree that this is probably one of the most endangered major college sports. There's a few reasons. One is that these rosters are comparatively small, which means that eliminating the roster or potentially adding it doesn't really change your Title IX obligations. It doesn't impact your total athlete enrollment in the same way that baseball or softball or track or swimming or sports that carry much larger rosters might. The fact that the rosters tend to be very heavily international can be a benefit, but in some places it could also be a detriment. You know, one thing I've heard from several ADs over the past couple of years is that it's harder to hit up some of your tennis alumni to give back to the program and to be visible in the program and on campus and engaged if they live in Croatia. Or if they were coming in here for a purely transactional relationship and then come back. Sometimes integrating those students into the athletic department or student body as a whole can be hard. There's also some places, and I'm not saying this was the case at Arkansas, this is just a dynamic I'm aware of, where there can be sometimes political pressure from lawmakers or politicians or donors about, hey, if we only have resources for X number of scholarships or athletic opportunities, we should be prioritizing either Americans or specifically Arkansans or people local. This sport doesn't necessarily do that. And the other two issues, right, is this is not a sport that's easy to generate revenue from. Only about 15 or so schools ticket. Most tennis facilities don't really have places to put in a lot of bleachers. You can't make ticket revenue. You're not making big money from ESPN or Flow Sports to broadcast these games. And so if you don't have corporate sponsorships or big donors, it's hard for the revenue to come in. You add all of that in together, and the fact that the very best American tennis athletes are just going straight to pro and are not engaging in this world at all. Yeah, I think it makes tennis specifically vulnerable in a way that many other sports aren't.
I think there's two big misinterpreted things. We'll put it that way. I'm at loss for a word here. But two things that I think need to be clarified. Number one, I think there is this notion that Arkansas, I'm talking about from the Razorback fans. This is something I've seen posted a number of times on the stories that we've written in the last few days, that Arkansas, quote unquote, can't afford tennis. I don't think that's the case. I think what they've done is they have decided that they want to take the money that they have spent on tennis and reallocate it elsewhere. And of course, you know, you may be aware of this, Matt. I'm not sure if you are. There's a Board of Trustees resolution that's been passed within the last couple of months that is mandating that money come down from campus to athletics, that there be no more no more funds directed from athletics to campus. Also, they've given Hunter Yurecek, the AD, a directive to go find $5 million more to add to the football budget. And I suspect, I don't know this, Yurecek hasn't spoken publicly about the tennis situation since he made the announcement last week. I suspect the $2.5 million that was going to tennis is going to be reallocated into that $5 million bucket for football. We'll see. But all of that is to say that this is not a matter of Arkansas not being able to afford tennis anymore. You made the point in your newsletter, and I tend to agree with you, that there's a strong case that could be made when you look at the difference between revenues and expenses last year at Arkansas that they could have afforded to put more money toward tennis.
They could have, well, yeah, you could have afforded to put more money in a lot of other sports. And I try to talk about this whenever sports gets cut in value neutral terms, because I will tell all of you and the fans listening, I don't think there's anything necessarily more virtuous about sponsoring 32 teams or 18 teams. I think it makes sense for schools to sponsor sports that are relevant to their campus, their community, their fans, and their particular conference affiliation. Mm-hmm. So if Arkansas, and maybe you can't say this publicly, but if they decided, you know, as a school, our fans aren't really supporting this program. There's no major benefit to the school, whether we're good, mediocre, or bad. The sports that people care about and are more invested in would materially benefit from other funding. And if we get rid of these programs, it can potentially improve the experience elsewhere, because now there's 20 fewer people to use academic support specialists or athletic trainers or the weight room or anything. I think that's defensible. I think if Arkansas theoretically said, listen, we're going to move away from tennis and we're going to drop this other sport and maybe we'll add women's flag football, which is a sport that maybe people in this community might care about more as fans than tennis, I would empathize with people being sad who cared about tennis, but I think that would be defensible too. When you have $190 million in revenue coming in, though, you can finagle 1.5% of any way that you want it. You don't think you can cry poverty about tennis or gymnastics or volleyball or anything else. It's simply a question of where you want to spend the money. All I ask from schools is that you be honest about that thought process and clarify that. Because if it is just about money, somebody might try to raise that money. Somebody might try to give that money. It could come in elsewhere. If it's about values, if it's about allocation of resources in a different way, then I think it's on the school to clarify that.
The other misconception, that was the word I was looking for earlier, by the way, couldn't find it this early in the morning. But the other misconception is that this is an NIL problem. And I think what people do is they see that players are getting paid money and they just scream NIL. This is not an NIL problem. This is a rev share problem. And I hope people can understand the difference between NIL and rev share. NIL is the money that you can go out and get from businesses for your, you know, your name, image, and likeness. Rev share is what I think really is got the athletic departments concerned, because it's $20.5 million that they have to share with athletes this year. That number
more,
goes
more next year. Yeah.
$21.3 million next year. It's an escalator. It increases every single year because revenues increase every single year. And I think after like 4 or 5 years, it gets revisited and they'll see, you know, what it's going to be after that. I think there's probably a pretty good chance, Matt, that goes up pretty significantly in 4 to 5 years, the amount of rev share that the athletic departments have to share with their athletes. But maybe explain that a little bit, that it's rev share. It's not NIL, right? That really is the problem that the athletic departments are facing.
You know, my friend, I think I'd actually zoom out even more. What I would probably argue is that it's athlete compensation is part of it, but it's a cost problem in general. Mm. And it's an increase in costs. And if you're sitting in Arkansas over the last 2 years, yeah, now you have a 20.5 or 21.3 or 20-ish and change new direct expense item that didn't exist in 2019 that you have to pay for. And that's real money, no doubt about it. But if that was the only thing happening, that would be doable for everybody in the Power Four. The challenge is that it's happening while costs for other things are going up and other revenues are in flux, right? If interest rates go up, compared to where they were before COVID, it's more expensive to borrow money to build things. If we have in a world where there's general inflation, and particularly for products that come in from overseas, a lot of those are regularly used by athletic departments, whether that's building materials for facility upgrades, whether that's the running shoes and the weight room equipment that you get from Nike and Adidas and everybody else. A lot of that comes from Southeast Asia. Labor increasing, and all of this also happens at a time where I couldn't tell you specifically from Arkansas, but broadly at large universities, state funding is decreasing. Mm-hmm. Competition for students is going up. So if you have a world where maybe 15 years ago, you could go to the governor and you could get an appropriation to help with some of these things, and that's off the table. And you already have, right? There's clearly pressure from Central Campus saying, we are not an unlimited ATM. You're going to have to manage your budget in other ways. And your travel and your equipment and your labor are going up, and now you have to pay athletes. That creates some meaningful challenges. And I think if we're being honest, it's especially hard in a place like Arkansas, because those of us that write about college sports for a living know there's a handful of extraordinarily wealthy corporations and people that care about this athletic program and want to support it. And there's a lot of fans that care very deeply about this program. But this is a poor state. This place does not have an unlimited number of lawyers making $450,000 that can cut checks and not worry about it. And I say that not to besmirch anybody. It's just that you have to you have to balance your revenue generation efforts differently than you would if you're Texas or that you would if you're Michigan. And all of that, I think, puts some unique pressures here and at Mississippi State and at a couple of other schools in this league.
I made the comment several times since things changed, so to speak, with NIL, rev share, everything. It has made college sports like Major League Baseball. You've got your small markets and your large markets, and Arkansas is a small market team, and you know it's they're going to face a lot of the same difficulties that I think a lot of small market teams face in Major League Baseball. And that's the unfortunate reality of it. Matt, we'll get you out of here on this. I wonder how much, because I know you're in touch with people who are in the administration nationwide. How much cover do you think that Arkansas kind of being the first SEC program to bite the bullet on a sport like this, how much cover do you think that gives other sport or other programs in the SEC or power conference programs to make similar moves? Because you know that there's more of these coming up.
I think that's a great question. And that hasn't come up immediately yet. I have a couple of AD calls later this afternoon, and I might ask about it. If anything, it I think does give more political coverage if you're not in the SEC, right? If everyone's yelling at Arkansas and you're, I don't know, Cal State Fullerton or somebody in the Southland Conference or something, I think it's a little bit easier to slip an announcement. It's like, all right, that's going to get the D1 ticker at the bottom, but everyone's hollering about something else, right? Almost news dump it a little bit. I'm sure that there are administrators who are watching not just what the national media and fan reaction is at Arkansas, but potentially if there's any political or you know regents or governance response, right? And if in a week America's all now we're talking about Brendan Sorsby and we're talking about realignment or we're talking about other things, could that open things up for somebody at Mississippi State theoretically or Missouri to have some difficult conversations? It's possible. I think I want to do some more reporting to find out, because the other thing I think it's important for fans to understand is that these kind of decisions are super local, right? And it's not just, oh my God, everyone's going to cut tennis now. It depends on your governor. It depends on who your donors are. It depends on your other sports sponsorship and Title IX obligations. I don't think what Arkansas does is necessarily what A&M or Oklahoma will do.
Matt, I want to give you a plug here. ExtraPointsMB.com is the website. MB as in Matt Brown. ExtraPointsMB.com. If you enjoy, I'll just say, if you enjoy kind of the business of college sports, do yourself a favor. Go sign up for his newsletter at ExtraPointsMB.com. Matt, you do a great job. And as always, we appreciate you being here.
Hey, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Hopefully next time we talk, it's about happier news, right?
Probably not going to be that way. But we only bring you on here for the sad times. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
Our thanks today to Patrick McEnroe and Matt Brown for their time and their perspective on this Arkansas tennis situation. We'll continue to cover the story at our website, wholehogsports.com. Let me do that again one time, Sydney. I've lost track.
That's fine.
Ready?
Yeah. In 3, 2, 1.
Hey, our thanks again to Matt Brown and Patrick McEnroe for their time today and their perspective, insight on this Arkansas tennis situation. We'll continue to cover the story at wholehogsports.com. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Bubba Carpenter will be in studio. We'll look back at the Razorback baseball game this afternoon against Northwestern State and look ahead to the weekend series against Ole Miss. Hope to see you there or at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day.